This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is live in studio. He's online at rickbritton.com. Award-winning and celebrated local author, historian, cartographer. I'm curious, if I walked into your studio right now,
right?
What's on your drawing table? Do you have a map you're working on, like, as we speak?
I do. I've got a board on it with two maps of the Seward Peninsula in western Alaska.
That's exactly what I was going to guess. Of course. Why are you doing a map of Alaska? What's that for?
I've got a job. I'm doing, 12 maps for a book for University of Alaska Press, and it's about this amazing guy. I can't wait to read this book. It's about this amazing guy called Kenji, who's from Japan, who has done everything that's ridiculously insane that you can imagine. And it's about all of his journeys. I mean, this guy...
Sounds like a reality TV show.
This guy pushed a bicycle across the Sahara. This guy has sailed up the Amazon. This guy froze himself on purpose into the permafrost north of Barrow, Alaska, you know, and finished writing his book up there. This guy's climbed Kilimanjaro. The guy has done everything that's ridiculously amazing that you can imagine.
And it sounds like he might have a little too much time on his hands, Rick.
Well, actually, yeah, the guy's incredibly busy. I was talking with the editor the other day, and I asked her, is this guy legally insane or what? And she laughed. She said, no, he's just this amazing professor.
And he's not a TV
professor.
He's not a TV show or anything?
He's not a TV. Well, he might be after this book comes out. I don't know.
I mean, if you can make a TV show about Sarah Palin wandering around Alaska or about fishing in Alaska, surely you can make something out of this guy.
Absolutely. Following this guy's life. The guy's amazing.
Well, we'll look forward to that.
Okay.
And Rick Britton joins us. He joins us every week, and we talk a little history of the United States Civil War. We've been exploring Rick's top 25 most significant battles that took place here in Virginia during the Civil War.
For almost 6 months.
Have we really?
We really have.
Wow.
Well, when you think about it, 25, one a week?
I got an email from somebody who said, what are y'all going to do when you're done with this list?
I don't know.
We got to do the top 25 battles that didn't take place in Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
I'm sure you could put a list together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you need to do. Yeah. More work for this. More work for your weekly appearance on this show.
It's fun. It's fun, man.
So this week, we're going to go back to the Battle of Five Forks.
That's right.
Which is, we've known now for a couple weeks that we are nearing the end. And Grant has Lee bogged down in a defensive position around Richmond, right?
Right, and some critical things have happened. Well, number one, we're in 1865. Number two, we're in the March of 1865. We're in the spring, in late March of 1865, early April, and, you know, the armies are on the move. The other critical thing that's happened that makes a big difference is Sheridan, along with a large cavalry army of 10,000, you know, he came through Charlottesville and captured Charlottesville, along with Custer, one of the guys commanding a division under him. Sheridan is back with Grant's army. So Grant decides that the way, and Sheridan, like we've talked about, an amazingly aggressive commander, somebody basically in the same mold from Ulysses S. Grant, somebody that Grant had brought from the West with him to command forces here in the East. So Grant puts Sheridan in command of three divisions of cavalry and two infantry corps, and basically says, get out past the Confederate right. In other words, go west and break up and get around the Confederate right, break it up. And that's what's going to cause Lee's to stretch himself too far and eventually break. And this is the strategy that worked. So
the significance of those troops that came through Charlottesville in March of 1865.
Right.
Those men who came through the town then, that's what finally did it.
Some of those men, no, they come through Charlottesville and they get back north around Richmond and rejoin the Army of the Potomac and the Army of the James there under Butler. They rejoin Grant's forces in the siege of Richmond and Petersburg.
And then they send them out to go around.
And then they send them out. Yeah, they have to come back and they actually have to rest for a little while before they send them out again.
Well, they were quite busy burning and looting.
They were very busy.
And destroying bridges and whatnot.
And just before they had gotten here, they fought a minor little action. I don't think you could even call it a battle at Waynesboro, where they destroyed really what was left of Jubal Early's army, and there really wasn't much left. And the reason I don't call it a battle is I doubt it even lasted 30 minutes, and the forces under Early were completely routed. Early was driven.
That's what was left of Confederate forces in the valley by that time.
That was it, and that's what made it possible for them to come over Rockfish Gap and come into Albemarle County and capture Charlottesville and Scottsville, and then eventually make it back to the Army of the Potomac, besieging Richmond and Petersburg. So they head west. Now, Lee has to respond to this. Lee has to react to this. So he sends a number of brigades of infantry and some cavalry forces. And there's a debate on the size of this force, probably around 10 or 12,000. Some sources say as many as 19,000, but it's hard to believe that he had 19,000 spare men to send out there. The problem is the man he sends in charge of this force out there to guard his right flank is George Pickett. And I have a really hard time understanding, and I need to look into this some more, that there's probably a reason. I don't know what the reason is. I just know that this was one of the worst possible choices he could have made as a major general to send out to guard his right flank. Now, Five Forks is a place in the middle of nowhere, and it's still in the middle of nowhere, where five roads come together, as you can imagine. The importance of
Five Forks. Is there a town there?
No. The importance of Five Forks is just behind it, just north of there, passes the South Side Railroad. And that's the reason they were out there, to protect that South Side Railroad. If Sheridan could get there and break that up, that's one of the railroads that's bringing in supplies to Lee's forces defending Petersburg and Richmond. The other thing is, it's 3 miles beyond the extreme Confederate right. So you see that Lee has gotten stretched and stretched and stretched further, and yet again, 3 miles beyond. So when Pickett gets out there with this force, he's 3 miles beyond the nearest friendly forces. So he has to use a brigade of dismounted cavalry, a really light force, to cover that gap. So he and his men get out there, and they dig in at Five Forks. They actually fought a little battle on March 30th, where they were successful against the advance forces that Sheridan had sent out there. But then Sheridan arrives with this entire force. It's too much for Pickett, so he gets at Five Forks, and he digs in. The infantry digs in. He puts the cavalry on the right, and then his left, he refused. So the last 100 yards, if you can imagine, this line of breastworks is facing south. The last 100 yards is facing back east, so it actually cuts up north for 100 yards. So that's called a return or a hook in your lines. So he sits there and he waits, and Sheridan comes at him. Sheridan's very aggressive, and he does an interesting thing. He takes his cavalry, he takes two divisions of his cavalry, dismounts them, and they advance and attack the breastworks. So it's a different kind of battlefield tactic that Sheridan's using. So the cavalry he actually uses dismounted to pin Pickett's infantrymen behind these breastworks. So you can imagine these cavalrymen don't often like to fight dismounted. They like to think of themselves as being better than infantrymen. They like to sit up higher and ride around really fast, and they're better. But Sheridan makes them dismount, and they attack the infantry behind the breastworks. Then he takes his one whole corps of infantry, and he places them on the right, and he advances with them. Now, the problem was, and it was a problem for Pickett, not a problem for Sheridan, these three divisions of infantry, when they get to the White Oak Road, and that's where Pickett had dug in along the White Oak Road, runs almost directly east-west, they realized that they were way beyond, way to the east of Pickett's breastworks. So what did they do? Sheridan ordered them to wheel to the left. So here's now an entire corps of infantry that's going to attack that 100 yards of breastworks in the return. At the same time, another force of Federals cut off the road connecting Pickett and the rest of the Confederate Army. So now Pickett is there. He's got almost 10,000 infantrymen storming down on his left, which is lightly defended, and he's completely cut off from Robert E. Lee and the rest of the Army.
Totally outmaneuvered.
And on top of everything, Pickett is not there. And here's one of the big problems I have with him. He's not even with his men at the breastworks.
He's eating fish somewhere, isn't he?
And Fitzley, Robert E. Lee's
this is the fish fry.
Nephew, and Rosser, who should have known better, all these guys should have known better, are at a shad bake several miles to the rear. They're enjoying shad and probably an adult beverage or two when they should have been up there at the breastworks with their men. So when all hell breaks loose at Five Forks, when those guys, when those 10,000 infantrymen attack his lightly defended left flank, Pickett isn't even there. So obviously they totally crush his force. Pickett, you know, hearing all this gunfire to the south, he comes riding hell for leather, and he just barely makes it back to his men. You know, but it was way too little, way, way too late. Yeah. And so this is just a huge federal victory. Pickett out of the 10.
What's the significance, Rick, to Lee back in Richmond?
Pickett out of this 10, 12,000 men loses about 5,000. Most of those men captured. They just threw up their arms because they got hit from the left and from the rear because those federal infantrymen got behind them. The critical thing to Lee is now he's lost that South Side Railroad. Now he's lost his right flank. Now he knows, and the very next day they launch an assault. Grant launches an all-out assault. But Robert E. Lee, with the loss of Five Forks, knew that this was the end. That was it. He could no longer hold on to Petersburg. Not being able to hold on to Petersburg means he can't hold on to Richmond. So it's all over now. He's got to get out.
Yeah.
He's got to get out of
and
this
And he finally
siege.
Does what he should have done months before. When Grant started the Overland Campaign and started coming through Virginia and started making real progress getting south. They should have taken a lesson from how they fight in other places in the world and said, we're not totally tied down to this city. You know, as of right now, our capital is in, southern Alabama, and, you know, we're taking our army over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to win.
If you wanted to absolutely win, of course. But then they're tied to that capital. And some people would argue, you know, the morale of the Confederate forces in the field would have taken a big hit if they had just said, okay, we're going to give up the capital at Richmond so easy without a big fight.
So next week, it's the Battle of Appomattox, right?
No, next week there's one Sailor's more. Creek on the way to Appomattox.
Yeah. So Lee and his remaining troops, which are how many guys?
About 50,000.
They just start running.
They're getting out. They're getting out of Richmond and Petersburg.
We'll get that story next week from Rick Britton. You can check him out online at rickbritton.com. Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, it was fun.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.